This episode of To the Journey is brought to you by TrekFan. TrekFan isn't just a Star Trek fan club, it's a challenge. You will explore new places, learn new things, and collaborate with other fans to solve puzzles, complete real-life mission objectives, and win great prizes. To face your first challenge and to find out more, head on over to TrekFan.org.
You're listening to Trek FM.
Maybe it's not the destination that matters. Maybe it's the journey.
To the journey.
Hello, everybody at home. This is To the Journey.
To the journey.
I am your co-host, Tristan Riddell, and with me, as always, is...
Charlene Schmidt and...
Lori Sears.
We have an interesting show for you tonight. This is something that I find a lot of fun. I've only been able to do it once, but you guys have done it twice, and we are doing an episode commentary. That's right, just as if you went onto your DVD or Blu-ray and hit the director's commentary or actor's commentary or writer's commentary, you can now hit your To the Journey commentary.
That's right.
Episode we are doing is Season 3, Episode 16, A Blood Fever.
Oh, no, come on. Give it life, man. Blood Fever.
The fever!
There you go.
I think Lori's is much closer to the tone of the episode, or at least parts of the episode. It can get kind of dark. But yes, so this is one of my favorite episodes, mainly because it's a B'Elanna episode, but it also deals with aspects of past Trek that we're used to from the original series, and even I think we dabbled in it with The Next Generation a little bit, maybe not. Anyway, doesn't matter. We've seen it before in the series as well as in the movies, and we all know we've all seen Spock go through Ponfar, and so the question was asked, when is Tuvok going to go through Ponfar? But they're like, nah, that'd be a little weird, and we'll get into that later. But soon we will all hit play at the same time, and we will give you more than enough time to hit play so we can all watch it together.
Aww. Together.
And for those of you who know the episode well enough, and there's plenty of you out there, you could just listen to it like I do sometimes. Sometimes, like, if I have a nice commentary, like, I'll rip it, put it on my iPod, and I won't even watch it. I'll just listen to it while I go for a run. It's not even a joke.
That's awesome.
So... You guys want to just get this started?
Let's do this.
Yes.
All right. Okay, so people at home, what we're going to do is we're going to go 3, 2, 1, click. And I'm literally going to say click, and that means hit it on Netflix, hit play on your DVD, whatever. Have it queued up, you know, wherever you are, and then hit the back button and pause it so that you get it right at zero. Okay? Everybody good?
Yes. Yep.
All right, here we go. So 3, 2, 1, click.
All right.
Here we go.
And we are orbiting a green planet.
I was about to say, that is really weird.
I think it's really pretty, actually.
Let's not pull an Arnold Schwarzenegger and just explain what's going on screen. Have you guys ever heard the Total Recall commentary? It's amazing.
I've heard bits of it, and it's, wow, dude.
Oh. It's absolutely amazing. It's like, okay, so now I'm entering the room, and as you can see, I'm looking for a taxi, and then I get into the taxi. It's like 2 hours of just that.
See, you don't even need to watch the movie. He'll explain the whole thing for you
exactly.
In the commentary.
Like,
you could definitely download that and go for a run.
Totally. And I don't know, Arnold's voice... I don't know if it's soothing. That's not the right word, but he's interesting to listen to.
Okay, so B'Elanna's hitting the screen.
You know what? We should just have the whole commentary of Tristan
and
doing
Arnold
an imitation
voice.
Of Arnold Schwarzenegger commenting on Blood Fever. I think we have a winner.
Yes.
So what I was talking about earlier is that everybody wanted to see and was wondering when Tuvok was going to go through Ponfar. And when they wrote the episode, they were actually thinking about how to do that. And then they realized, wow, this is way too problematic because he's married. He has kids. You know, what's he going to do? I mean, as we know, we figure out what they do later. It's just a, he uses a holographic version.
He uses and abuses a hologram.
Yeah. Literally. And so they're like, hey, what about Vorik? He's Vulcan and we've seen him before. So, and then they're like, but let's not focus on Vorik. He's just a minor character. Let's find a way to transfer it to B'Elanna. So I thought it was a great way, because we all know that Vulcans, you know, they use touch in very many different ways. And mm-hmm. I thought mm-hmm. it was a very believable way of making a non-Vulcan go through Ponfar. What did you guys think?
Totally. It made sense to me. I was not.
Yeah, same here. I thought this is a great twist for... I consider it a kind of a throwback, a little nod to the original series. And mm-hmm. I'm glad they didn't go with Tuvok for the Ponfar episode, because that's just way too predictable.
It really is. And he gets his chance later on.
Yeah. But I'm glad that they didn't do this for this episode. Because I think it would have fallen really flat. It just wouldn't have been that great. And I know this was a dilemma for the writers. Like, if you read on Memory Alpha, they were really contemplating, okay, if we're going to do the Ponfar episode, how are we going to make it good? How are we going to make it big? So they went round and round on this, and I think they came up with a good solution myself. Yeah.
I think so, too. I think Vorik was a great choice. I mean, I didn't really, you know, I'm not, like, in love with him as a character. I think he's a fine supplemental character. And also the beauty of it is that you don't know what he's going to do. And
right, because we don't know him that well.
No.
Yeah, exactly. We don't know him that well. And granted, you know, when a Vulcan's going through Ponfar, you know, you never know what they're going to do. But I just love that, like, this guy comes on too strong, grabs him, and then B'Elanna's just like, screw you, and smacks him in the face.
Yeah, that nice little chop we just saw. That was fantastic. That was great. Good job, B'Elanna.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yes, there's a lot of physical action in this episode. In many ways, as we will see.
As much as I love, you know, as a kid, I was raised on TNG. And I love the music and the sweeping shots of the Enterprise D, and I love all of that, but just nothing can compare to the beauty that is the opening theme of Star Trek Voyager.
For real.
It really
this
is the best.
This has got to be... Yeah, it is. I think it's the best, too. It's just so beautiful. The music, you can't really go wrong with Jerry Goldsmith. The dude was a master at what he did. I think it's just the whole thing is just gorgeous. It still holds up to this day. I mean, if this was an opening sequence for a show in 2013, I would buy it.
Oh, yeah.
We just saw Jennifer Lean's name. I actually dated a girl in high school whose name was Jennifer Lyon. And for the longest time, I thought that Jennifer Lean's name was pronounced Lyon. I was like, that's a cool name. And I was
I had a friend who, they had that same spelling, but they said line.
Oh, they said line. I've never heard that one before.
So, I mean, there's, I guess, several pronunciations for same spelling of the name.
Well, I guess with my name, you could say Riddle or Rydell or something
right.
like that. But those are all wrong, of course. It's just...
I swear I thought you were going to say you had like a flower sack baby of Jennifer Lee this time.
Yeah.
Well, if I had to take the course over again, I probably would have chosen a Kes flower sack baby instead of Seven.
No, you wouldn't have. No, you wouldn't
have. Lori's just saying she's just calling the BS.
Because, I mean, you couldn't have built Kes in Alcove.
That's
true.
I would build her a hydroponics bay.
There you go. Oh, no, that that is so cute.
See,
that
I know, what's, going.
So
I know
she could,
what's going on.
She could set all the plants on fire. There you go.
Yeah, you could burn it when you're done.
Awesome.
Bring
oh wait
fire.
Okay, watch this coming up, just his head going oh no, it's I thought it's later on, like his head just goes so far down in shame it's almost comical.
Yeah.
They're okay. Like you're going through this, right? And he just goes shroom.
We've got to watch for this.
Yes.
Like,
and
I
this
can't
is
remember.
Of course Jerry Taylor's son playing Vorik.
Oh.
Who also played Tarek on TNG's Lower Decks, who is essentially this character.
Yeah.
But yeah, the whole thing about naming rights, writers' credits, blah, 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 blah.
See, that would have been so great. I would have loved... There, right there. There it is.
Poor
guy.
And that is pretty good. He just went from eye level to floor.
Oh, that's right. Directed by Andrew Robinson, as all of us know, as Garrick.
Yes.
That's awesome, too.
Yes, indeed. He directed a few episodes of Star Trek in his day.
I think he'd only directed one before this one. I can't remember what other ones he directed.
I think it was looking
for Parmok in all the wrong places. I don't know if that was his first one, but that was the one before this one.
I'm not sure. It's my memory alpha.
Everybody go
look it up.
Yeah. Right now.
There's too many hours of Star Trek, honestly, to keep track of it all.
That is one thing that's always kind of puzzled me. As logical as the Vulcans are, I mean, and they even, you know, talk about this later in the episode. It's like, it's ridiculous. Like, when the Doctor kind of dresses down Tuvok, he's like, this is ridiculous. I mean, you're a logical race. It's the 24th century. You have some really archaic views on sex.
Yes, and they do.
I just thought it was such a contradiction. I mean, I liked it as a contradiction because I thought it added some layers, but it was just, it's weird if you think about it because they're so pragmatic about everything.
Right, because why would you be so secretive about something as natural as sex? That's not logical. But it is also very emotional, and therefore I think it's kind of like that Achilles heel. It's like they just don't really want to go there. It's like walking on eggshells for him, I think.
Yeah.
It's a very touchy subject because it is so emotional.
It's too close to home.
Maybe so.
Now there's so where do you guys fall on the debate of, can Vulcans have sex anytime, or is it only once every 7 years? they only have the urge to mate every 7 years, like that uncontrollable urge of Ponfar.
Right.
But do Vulcans have sex other times? Like, what do you guys think?
It's such a great question, because you would think, say, Sarek and Amanda, I always had this idea that they had sex beyond the Ponfar.
That's what I choose to believe.
Yeah.
Because that's just kind of, that's natural. That's what people in love do.
Yeah.
But then would between they be two in love? Vulcans,
yeah.
I wonder.
I don't know. Doesn't Tuvok have, like, several children? But they never say how old they are. But
yeah, and he's kind of older himself. I mean, he's definitely had enough chances to have several children.
I can't remember. Four? I guess he could have, but I can't imagine. I don't know.
Well, I remember, and I know that you guys will love this, but I read in a book, I think it might have been Homecoming, when Tuvok actually gets home and he sees his wife, they go upstairs and have sex, like, once they get home.
Do they really? I don't remember that from Homecoming. Oh my god!
Yeah, it was either Homecoming or Further Shore. I can't remember, but they and like he says he even goes a little bit quicker up the stairs than he normally would. And they imply in that book they straight up say, like, yes, we have the urge every 7 years, but I mean, why not right now? You know, like, it's been a long time since I've seen my mate, and even the most logical, unemotional people can see the benefits of it. So I don't know, this is just a book, it's not canon, it wasn't on screen, so that's why I think the debate rages on.
Yeah, and it's a great question that I hope we never get a straight answer to, because it is fun to ponder.
It is. It's a mystery.
And maybe it varies from Vulcan to Vulcan.
Could be.
Just as human sex drives are different, some people just don't want sex ever, some people are complete sexaholics, and there's everybody in between. And hey, I mean, who's to say what's healthy for a Vulcan?
That's true. That's a very good point. I love these mining and, like, repelling outfits.
I do, too. Yes, they are so good.
I like the shiny parts on the side.
One thing that you can always count on Star Trek is whenever they have an alternate outfit for, like, the tundra or the jungle, or going, like, a spacesuit, or going on a meteor, or going to an alien planet. Like, whenever there is an alternate type of uniform, you are guaranteed to get that color, that one strip of color.
Yeah.
Of what they represent. Like, there's no just one universal outfit that they wear for when they go someplace. It's no, there's red, there's gold, and there's blue. Yeah.
We've got to keep the designers busy.
Yeah.
And they've also got, like, their rank on the collar, too. What would be the point of that? Why would you need that? Just so you don't forget I'm in charge.
Exactly. Yeah,
I suppose so. Yeah, those pips mean a lot, I suppose.
I'd sleep in pips if I had them. I put them in my Riker blue pajamas. That's what I would do.
You put them on your pajamas just in case there's an emergency and you have to evacuate your quarters in the middle of the night. Look, I'm in charge here, okay? We will follow me as we evacuate. You got that?
I'd love to see that more, like when people have to rush to a situation. You see it a couple of times in Star Trek when they come straight from the holodeck, they have their outfits on. Mm-hmm. But there's so many times, like red alert, and then they're off doing something, they're on a date, or they're in the holodeck, and then they come to the bridge, and they're in their uniform. I'm like, yeah. No, the Romulans are attacking. It doesn't matter what you're wearing. Just get to your station.
Right. You don't need to take a few minutes to change. It doesn't matter.
No.
Yeah.
That should not be a Starfleet protocol.
No.
Not at all.
Okay, this hole this cavern that they're about to jump down and mm-hmm. rappel down, you see it and it looks crazy deep. But then when they fall, they're just like, "Oh, that's smarts."
Yeah, that would, I mean, if it was as deep as they want us to believe, it would probably kill most people.
Yes. I mean, now they do go down a significant ways, but it's still...
Even so, and of course it's got to be Neelix who fudges us up. I'm speaking little bit ahead.
Definitely.
But of course it's Neelix, because, you know, he likes to brag about how he can do anything, and yet...
Well, it wasn't really his fault, was it? I mean, I thought it was just an equipment malfunction, and then B'Elanna blamed Neelix or something like that.
I suppose it is, it's just... He's the one who ultimately put her life in danger.
That's true.
And, yeah. I mean, if Neelix wasn't such a braggart about everything. See, okay, yeah, it wasn't his fault. It's just, yeah.
Yeah, that's whatever.
See, okay, see, they didn't rappel down that far before
they
fell.
No,
they
didn't land that hard.
Dude, I had a friend who fell 2 feet off a ladder and it messed him up so where he couldn't walk straight for a week. Oh,
and these guys are just fine.
They're just fine.
They should have broken legs or hips, backs, something.
Those suits have hidden padding.
You think so?
Yeah, that's what it is. Heads.
Extra protection for their skeletal system.
Neelix has all that hair to protect his head.
Yeah. Well, that's I guess Neelix is kind of injured. I forgot about that part.
Oh, that's true. Yeah, so now he's a nuisance, like he usually is. It's just a bad corner to put Neelix in. I don't care. And then now B'Elanna, she's starting to go just a little bit crazy. Notice that the zip line on her uniform has gone down just a little bit, because she's starting to get a little sweaty.
And she bit him.
Awesome.
And then she does sort of her version of a Mike Tyson.
Oh, gross.
She bites him. Just not in the ear.
Yeah. I love it when they have to, when he has to talk about it later. She bit me.
Yeah, I love that delivery.
Yes.
Yeah, it's great stuff. Yeah, and you know what's fun is just how awkward this episode is. I mean, Paris and Torres were kind of flirting with each other off and on before this episode. But here it's like, okay, if I don't mate with you, you'll die.
Well, Robert Duncan McNeil said himself in an interview that, like, a day before they filmed, the original script was, I love that, she bit you.
the original script, the reaction. Well, then, okay.
In the original script, Tuvok actually goes down with a team and is locked in a cavern with B'Elanna, and he helps her kind of get through. You know, he went through it himself, and so he's supposed to help her go through it. Mm-hmm. But then they're like, wait, what if Tom is with her and we have some sexual tension because we want them to get together anyway? And I was like, wait, they just thought of that like an hour before they shoot, like a day before they shoot?
Yes.
I was like, that would have been the first thing in my mind, like, let's do this.
Well, okay, think about this. How boring would it have been if Tuvok had B'Elanna meditating and trying to keep herself mm-hmm. centered and calm as she endures the pond fire. No, this is much better.
It is better.
It's incredibly awkward. It's incredibly physical, and it's hot and it's steamy. And if I recall correctly, the promo for this episode, I mean, it just screamed sex. You figured that they were going to do it right in front of us.
The promo was fantastic. I need to rewatch
the promos. Oh, gosh.
I remember seeing that as a kid and thinking, whoa. Well, okay. Like, I'll tune in for this one, yeah.
Sex, sex, sex.
It was, like, all shadows going on in the background and everything.
Oh, yeah, because the lighting, yeah, it's incredibly intimate, and they're, like, her skin is glistening.
Oh, God.
Oh, man.
One thing that I really liked was I found a quote from Andrew Robinson where he said that he took a moral away from the story. And to quote him, he said, "For me, this story had an important and dangerous mythic theme. We all have to confront and explore our We all have to confront and explore our sexuality, which requires that we descend into the caves of our subconsciousness."
And of course, they're in a cave.
Yeah.
And of course, they're in a cave. Yeah, the cave was in quotes. Yeah.
But it's true. I mean, honestly, how do you find out what you like and what you're into if you don't venture out a little bit and find out?
You never do.
This is I really like this conversation, kind of the older, wiser Vulcan coming and saying,
the
like,
mentor.
What are you doing? What's that?
Yes. Now, this is where Tuvok is useful. I'm glad he's trying to help Vorik rather than B'Elanna.
Mm. Yeah.
This makes more sense, even.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Him staying on the ship and Tom going down. Yeah. It's at least for right now. I think it definitely makes more sense.
Now. Yes. Yeah. Oh, poor Vorik.
Yeah.
She rejected me and I'm crushing on her so bad. For now. What does he say? He admires her skill as an engineer or something like that.
It's enough for me.
So I got a question for you. Okay, say if you had the choice between B'Elanna or Seven, which would it be?
My wife.
That is the correct answer.
Good job there.
Well done, sir.
Thank you.
Okay, that's all I need to know. Nothing further. The tension. Love it. Yeah, I mean, you can just tell that Vorik is beyond Tuvok's help that he's offering right here.
Yeah, he's suffering.
So we have Vorik here. Luke's a little disappointed.
Yes, yes. I was really hoping you'd reprise that.
Oh, it's going to come up again.
It's got to. It's going to be...
Oh, wait. I love how Tom always wants to know, like, he's constantly trying to figure out, like, how old Tuvok is and how many times he's gone through Ponfar, and he just asks him right there, and Tuvok's like, listen, you're on a need-to-know basis, and you don't need to know.
You need to mind your own, buddy.
That's right.
There was an episode later on, I can't remember which one it was, but he was, like, Paris was openly talking about how many times Tuvok went through Ponfar on the bridge in front of the bridge crew. And I'm kind of like, whoa. Like, wouldn't Tuvok just say, like, red light, inappropriate work talk?
Yeah. TMI something.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's not exactly appropriate for the bridge.
No. Tom's not exactly appropriate sometimes, so there
that's
you are.
That's true. Well, Lori, you have that point right there.
That's it right there. Yes. And already, here we are in, I guess it's a cave.
A man-made
cave. With our intimate
cave.
Lighting.
Intimate
lighting. She's not in a tank yet. She's finding this Galasite. Now, okay, remind me, guys, what does the Galasite do?
Space stuff.
Yeah, I was going to say, it runs
it
the toilets
the
or something.
Yeah, I know it's something with the warp core, but we're not actually... I'm just looking at the captions, and I think I missed that part of this episode. And I haven't watched this one in a little while, so I forget what Galasite does. Oh, well. Yeah, it makes them go.
Yes.
Wait, is it Galasite or Galamite?
I thought it was Galasite.
Yeah, I think that was this... Not the
Yeah, Galamite does not sound right. Hey,
that sounds like Vegemite.
Vegemite?
I didn't eat a Vegemite.
I hope not.
Yummy, yummy, yummy.
Galasite. She just said it.
Okay. I should have bet you. Darn it, I would have won.
I wouldn't have bet that one because I wasn't that sure.
Boo. Pawn what? Not Pawn Stars, that's for sure.
Pawn Stars.
It's a great show.
No, it's not.
Oh, yes, it is. It is. I think my husband's going to visit there when I'm at Star Trek Las Vegas.
Okay, here we go. Galasite was a naturally occurring, though rare, mineral. When the mineral was located, it was usually found in deposits large enough to be mined extensively. The deposits could produce strong electrical currents when metal objects were held nearby. Mm. It still doesn't really tell us what it does. Oh, galasite could be used to refit a starship's warp coils. That's what it is.
Oh, okay. All right. And if it's so rare, it makes you wonder, well, where are they getting all the galasite for in Starfleet? For all their warp-capable ships.
They're using those spare EMHs to mine it wherever they can
there
find
you go.
It.
That's true. Mm-hmm. They are doing
all
it later on.
Mark 1s.
I really like these alien designs. I love that they incorporated the rock dust in their outfits and their makeup.
Yes.
And they have kind of that pseudo-Kazon cloth and the hair thing going on.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but they really do look like cavemen.
With guns, which is just terrifying.
Well, right, yeah. Huh? That's not a very... I don't know, the guy, he looks sort of like rugged, beaten up, kind of. And then he's got this really kind of aerodynamic, sleek gun.
Mm-hmm.
It might as well just be shiny, and there might as well be lens flares.
That's what old Star Trek is lacking, is lens flares. Someone should integrate that into some new Star Trek or something.
They should remaster the Blu-rays and include lens flares.
I'm just joking for people who are listening. Please don't write me any letters.
No angry mail, please. And if you insist, send them straight to Tristan.
I love Tom's screaming voice. It's always the same tone every single time, no matter what the situation.
Yeah, that's kind of interesting, isn't it? Yeah, B'Elanna, you stay away from me. I'm in heat. For lack of a better way of putting it. So, Arnold, tell us about these caves.
Well, as you can see, the guys were there, but now they are gone.
Wait, is this Arnold or John Madden?
Yeah, I didn't know where that accent was going. That was rough.
I was more just in the quality of the commentary. If he runs the field down 10 more yards, they'll score another first down, and then if they keep scoring first downs, it'll be a touchdown.
Exactly, John.
Awesome.
Yes.
Oh, okay, see, the layers are getting off now. Now she's
down
to the tank top.
Yeah, okay, we're stripping down. Getting a little sexy. What's getting a little bloody, even?
I had a, I think I talked about this before, but I had a Women of Star Trek calendar.
Yes, you might have talked about this.
It was my favorite calendar of all time. And for some reason, B'Elanna was October. I remember the month. And for some reason, they chose the episode, the one where they're trying to, Jesus.
Which one?
The guy was like mutated because of all the radiation.
Revulsion. No.
Is it?
No.
Which season?
The end? Is it the one at the end where the guy has like the pizza face sort of face? Where Joe Carey dies? Is that the episode?
I think it's Juggernaut is what it is.
Oh, okay.
It's about the Malon, you know, when she has to go to the Malon ship.
Okay.
Yeah, sorry, I was not describing it at all. I was just like, you know, the thing. But no, like, she goes to the Malon ship, and she has to deal with that that monstrous guy at the end.
Yeah.
And, like, she's all, like, sweaty and gross and covered in grime and oil. For some reason, that's the picture that they chose for her calendar.
That's awesome.
It's like, she's, like, just disgustingly gross, but then she had the least amount of clothing, so I'm guessing that's why they chose
that. I'm sure that had something to do with it. But, you know, some people really kind of like it when their girls get dirty.
Okay, all right, moving on.
nothing further. I'll just leave it at that.
Now, is this before or after the Doctor got his mobile emitter?
It is after.
After, okay.
Because he got it in Future's End.
Okay, I know there's only so much money on sets.
I know what you're going to comment about.
But is this really where you would want to get busy for to cure your ponfar on Neelix's beach?
You know, okay, actually, that's not what I thought you were going to comment on. I thought you were going to comment about on that ceiling fan that they had spinning very prominently in the start of this scene, and it just really stuck out just now as they showed it.
No, I love the ceiling fan. No, I'm mainly just talking about, like, okay, so we're just supposed to imagine that, I'm sorry, this is, I'm so scared I'm going to get too graphic, and if I get too graphic, I apologize. What do? They just find a corner? Like, what happens?
Just right in the middle of the whole thing, I guess. I mean,
they could have said, like, here is a private, like, you know, like, private room for a private Vulcan. That's all that I wanted. So, but whatever. Anyway.
I don't know. And you think, okay, they're Vulcans. Why? Maybe he'd be more comfortable on Vulcan instead of the tropical resort.
Yeah, isn't that where they send Tuvok? That's a good point. That's right. He has, like, a, yeah. Like,
see, yeah, like, yeah, yeah. At least, like. Okay, now that's even weirder from a human sensibility, but for a Vulcan sensibility, that makes sense to have something a bit of home. And I love that the Doctor is the digital pimp.
There's also the contrast of the really hot, arid surroundings of Vulcan, and then you've got tropical resort.
Yeah.
Yeah, not the same.
There's no palm trees on Vulcan, okay? That's true. I'm just saying.
Boom, that's the name of the episode. There's no palm trees on Vulcan.
Okay, there we have it. Oh, B'Elanna, so moody, poor thing. Oh, angry grunt is the caption right here.
Angry grunt.
Nice. Thank you for that, Paramount, whoever made the captions. Okay. No, I'm not going to comment about that. Never mind.
Just leave it to yourself. It's all right. It's all right. We can sometimes just let the scene happen. It's cool.
Thing is, okay, just a few seconds before I said that, just pause and then take a look at B'Elanna, and it's going to be pretty obvious what I was going to comment about. That's all. They really did sex this thing up, I gotta say.
Well, that was the whole idea.
They did.
That was the idea.
And Andrew Robinson, he is not scared of sexuality whatsoever. If you look at the beginning of the first season of Deep Space Nine, the way he played Garak, he was trying to play him in a much more pansexual kind of way, where you wouldn't know who he was going to try to seduce or who he was going to go after, and it also added some mystery to the character. But that was a little risky for modern day television back then, so the producers are like, yeah, stop that.
And that's a shame, because that really fits Garak, for one thing.
Yeah,
because he's so mysterious to begin with. You don't know when he's lying or telling the truth. I mean, it would make sense that sexually he's just as mysterious, but then why is that such a taboo?
Well, I mean, I'm
that's America for you.
I can see both sides of it logistically, because I feel like it absolutely fits his character, and I think it fits a Cardassian assassin of his caliber. But at the same time, I would not want to constantly think about that when he's interacting with Julian. I just love the friendship that they had. And like he awkwardly puts his hands on Julian the first time that they meet. And I was just like, I could not handle that for 7 years. Like, I would just... Like, no. Like, let's just define some parameters between the two of them. Now, I know if you go on Tumblr and all you see is fan fiction of Garak and Julian.
Yes, you
but
do.
But that's just messed up, so we're not even going to talk about that.
Yeah, you never want to talk about the fanfic.
No.
You're in such denial.
You hate it.
And I'm sure we might have lost some followers, but I don't care.
Oh, it's all right. Well, and speaking of fanfic, oh my gosh, I remember the explosion of Paris and Torres fanfic that erupted in the third season, especially after this episode. Oh man, the things that they had them do. Oh yes. And not all of it is kid safe, so just beware. Yeah.
Oh, I love that this is where we find out where Tuvok has some artificial implants in his arm. I think that's great.
That is a cool detail. And the thing is, they don't bring this up very much in the future now, do they?
No.
Wait, about like implants?
About Tuvok's implants, yeah.
Oh no, I think this is the only time we hear about it, but we do hear about other times throughout Trek, like Nog had a completely prosthetic leg, but I doubt that Tuvok had that kind of.
Okay, I was just I was wondering about Tuvok, like if it was one of those weird fleeting facts, like Chakotay's a vegetarian, and then they remember it a couple times, and then totally forget about it later, and then just like totally go against it in Chakotay's case, where he's eating what was it, lamb chops or something with
Seven, something like that, like
on
chicken.
Their date.
Or, yeah,
yeah, whatever. That disappointed me greatly. So we missed Tom's great line of, does that mean you find me irresistible?
He says that to all the ladies.
It's such a great Tom line.
Just typical.
Yes, and he's trying to be such a gentleman for the first time in his life because he wants a real relationship with B'Elanna.
It's
which
sweet.
I find incredibly sweet. Yes. Yeah. Considering where he started in this series as the so-called ladies man, basically wanting to get in the sack with any female he possibly could. This is a change for him, and it's very nice.
It is nice.
During this conversation, we find out that they went to the under the surface to escape somebody from coming back, and we later find out who that species is. I think this was a fantastic reveal for it.
Oh, they did a great job with that.
Yeah, that was very nicely done.
Yes.
Very nicely done. Like, because we were all thinking it. We were all wondering when it was going to happen. And this episode, they're like, yes, everybody, it's going to happen.
Yeah, here it comes. Dun, dun. Yes, and what's so great is it's just at the very end for, what, 5 seconds?
5 seconds max.
And then cut. Done. And you got to wait till next time.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's the way they, yes.
We're now in the caves of our subconsciousness.
Yeah. Try to stay calm. I know it's hard. That's what she said.
Oh, geez.
Sorry. Sorry.
I was really hoping we could go the entire episode without somebody making it. That's what she said. But I knew it was a fool's errand.
Well, look who you've got co-hosting with you. I mean, no offense, Lori. I'm speaking on myself here. Yeah.
Yeah. This scene in this section was all over the promos. Of Tom on top of B'Elanna, yeah.
I think that this scene was the promo entirely, nothing else. Yeah. Oh, and she's got leaves in her hair, too. I forgot about that. She's got it all going. She's getting a little dirty. She's a little sweaty. She's a little bloody. Whatever you're into.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think Tom Paris has the patience of a saint.
And the restraint.
That's the word I was looking for. The restraint of a saint.
Yeah, because he doesn't really want to do her until he absolutely has to. As we get closer to the end here. But it's like B'Elanna is the drunk girl of his dreams at a college frat party. And this is the moment he's been waiting for 3 years.
But it's even worse than that, though, because he could cure her drunkenness.
Yeah, that's right.
If he had sex with her.
Yeah. She's going to die if he doesn't.
Yeah.
But he just can't.
So, like, he could be a hero either way. It's a win-win scenario, and no one would blame him.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't think Tom would be at fault here.
Nope.
No, not at all.
I do like that he gives in just a teeny bit right here.
Just a little bit.
Because, I'm sorry, he is a human male.
I was going to say he's a red-blooded American male.
Yes, yes. If he hadn't, something is wrong with this guy. He's taking drugs to decrease his libido, or he's not heterosexual or something.
Well, we all know that's not true.
Right. Because as we said before, he liked the ladies. Still does, but now he really just wants B'Elanna.
Yeah.
Right.
Yes. And for as strange as their relationship got started in this episode, they really turned it into something. One of the best real relationships that we saw in Star Trek.
This is totally awkward. Like, he's just
wandering
in. Like, you done?
I mean, knock
that
on the
door. That would be like you walking into your parents' room when you're a child.
Too much.
Did you do it yet?
It's also illegal what he just did, too. But I guess it's different because he's a doctor.
That's
true.
So.
Yeah.
Confidentiality, doc.
I do love that was brought up in Deep Space Nine. Like when Garrick enters into Julian's holo novel, he's like, not only is it rude, but it's illegal. And I love that rule was established.
Yeah, that's got to violate how many HIPAA space violations?
HIPAA space violations.
Yeah, something. I mean, come on. We have to sign all those forms, we know.
So I love that Vorik fools everybody.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You imagine the strength it's taking him to do this right now. Pretty incredible, but he is a Vulcan.
Yeah.
And he is disciplined.
It's acting. It's all acting.
Sort of like the Patrick Stewart thing.
Yes.
That? He was acting.
Actually, like, he thought I was asleep.
Yeah, exactly. Acting. That's it.
That was a genius episode of American Dad, by the way. Anybody who hasn't seen it needs to watch it. It's called Blood Crieth Unto Heaven. One of the best episodes they've ever made.
There you go.
Patrick Stewart is just top notch in that episode.
Mm. The dude is in such fine form. He's doing a movie this summer I really want to see, but it's actually an Israeli film.
Is that?
Oh, yeah, I saw that.
That's
preview.
Not the elephant hunting one, or
yes,
is it?
It
yes,
it is.
Yes. And apparently it has nothing to actually do with elephants or hunting.
That's good. So it's kind of like Naked Lunch.
I suppose so. It's what Tom and B'Elanna are going to have.
Naked Lunch.
Naked Lunch.
Sadly, not in this episode.
No.
Later. Not really. Many times later. And everybody on Deck 9 will hear it.
Section 12. That's right.
Yeah, that's right. Yes, everybody knows. Can't control themselves. So, Arnold, caves?
As you can see, the rocks are falling and they find a way out. And, it's Chakotay. He finds a way out of the cave. He now signals to Voyager, but no one's calling back.
I really love this. I could listen to this whole episode like that.
I do like what's coming up. Like, this is such an awkward moment.
Oh,
but
God.
Tuvok's like,
it really
is.
You must help her now, Mr. Paris.
He's like, you gotta go right now. Like, go to the bushes.
Yeah.
Do
like,
it.
Do it
if
now.
If I was Chakotay, I'd be like, oh, wow. I can't look him in the eye knowing what he's gonna go do here.
And also, like, it's like, it's automatically Tom. Like, I just wanted, like, Chakotay to kind of, like, interject. Well, maybe I... No. Okay, no. And then it's just like, fuck, sorry.
That would be totally awesome.
Just a little moment. Don't even focus on it. Just like, well, I could... But no. Okay, no, I'll go back to the ship.
No.
It's fine.
Oh, wait, no. That would have been an incredibly weird and totally fantastic moment.
Yes.
And we would kind of all wonder why, all of a sudden, Chakotay... Really? Like, sort of like the episode Persistence of Vision, where it was B'Elanna's fantasy that she and Chakotay
right.
were making
I was thinking
out. Like,
about that
what
too.
Was he thinking about in that episode then, huh?
I love the dialogue in this scene. It's so perfectly well crafted, and Robbie does such a good job. He's like, what are you doing? Enjoying myself?
Yes. Right here. Yes, I like being pinned down and thrown to the ground. Yes. Yeah, I have a broken vertebrae, but it's good. But then, like, he really does. He gets into it. He resists back. And so now they're kind of getting into it. Hey, you might as well enjoy yourself if you've got to do this.
This is the moment where all the parents
were
like, do I need to change the channel?
Just when they start to reach that point. Nope, lest we forget, Star Trek is family friendly. Nothing above a TV 14.
Tuvok runs in. I heard zoo noises. What's going on?
What are they doing back there?
I love this coming up, like Tuvok's little like little motion where he's like, okay, begin, like start the fight, and he does like this little karate chop.
Reminds me of Celebrity Deathmatch. I want a good clean fight.
It's totally true, like
Let's
no rabid punches.
Yeah, that's pretty good. And I do think this was pretty genius how they decided to resolve this for both Tuvok, or not Tuvok, B'Elanna and Vorik.
Yeah.
To have them
and
fight.
I love that it wasn't like, okay, you need Tom to fight for you. No, B'Elanna's fighting for herself.
Mm-hmm.
Darn
like, that,
right.
That is Star Trek, yeah.
Yes. Well, and it's not Tom with the Ponfar, it's B'Elanna in this... Yes, they should fight to the... well, not to the death. They just beat the pawn far out of each other.
Well, I'm just talking about how it would have been easy to have the man come to the rescue.
Right. And, well, and you know what? In TOS, that would have happened.
Yeah.
But not here, because this is Voyager, and the women are liberated.
Oh, did you see that? It does that little twist. The little twist of the wrist. He's like, begin.
Yes. And one thing I love is the music in this episode, because it does have echoes of TOS, and yet it is a little uniquely Voyager.
Yeah.
It's just a nice little hybrid. I thought they did a fantastic job of doing that.
Yeah, it's the Voyager version of Amok Time.
There you
Essentially,
go.
Essentially, that's what this is.
That's
yes.
what they're, yeah.
It's what they're going for.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Dun, 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 dun.
Totally.
That was a little Peter there for some reason. Peter Griffin.
That was really good, Tristan.
Thank you.
That's fantastic.
You see B'Elanna's hitting Vorik repeatedly.
He's choking her now.
I love the Star Trek punch where they put their hands together and make a double fist. Yeah. And you just start hitting them up and down.
Yes.
So yes. great. You'll only see that in Star Trek. It's the only franchise you will ever see that.
You're absolutely right. Yes.
Very popular amongst the women of Star Trek. Kira does it a lot.
It makes you wonder who's training them and why do they do that?
Right? Like, I feel like I'd break my fingers if I did that.
Yes. I was going to say, does that work? I'm not a puncher, so I don't know.
I mean, is this something in martial arts that we just don't know, or what?
Maybe.
I don't know.
I'm not a puncher. I like that.
You're not a puncher.
Now, this is awkward, too.
Oh, yes. Awkward turbo lift scene the day after.
Awkward turtle.
B'Elanna wants to pull a Tasha Yar. It never happened.
Oh, yeah.
And this I like that Tom isn't going to let her get away with that.
No.
See, this is, I feel bad for Tom because this is the awkward morning after where nothing happened.
Yeah.
Like he didn't even have the benefit of having an awkward night. It was
right.
Like,
he didn't even get the satisfaction.
Yeah.
No,
nope,
he did
none
not.
None of that.
Poor guy.
But he
yeah.
still gets the awkward morning though.
Yeah. He gets all of the crap. None of the good stuff.
Yeah. Still running on angst there.
Yeah, there is a little bit of angst in this relationship at this point.
Yep.
Yeah.
But he was still sweet.
Oh, absolutely. Yes.
Always a gentleman.
You know.
Yes, he's a
total
gentleman.
He's listening to her rationalize this away and then comes back with, I don't think so.
So you can see Tom and B'Elanna are talking in the turbo lift.
Yeah, he's not afraid of her. Her Klingon side. He wants to see more of it. He likes violence now. I can't do it as good as you. Make me stop.
It's all right. Yes, please stop. Just quit right now.
I'm sorry. I can't do impressions. I suck.
I forgot that we... Oh, wait. No, that's not right. I mean, I forgot that the last scene before the reveal of the bad guy was in the turbo lift. I forgot. Oh, yeah. Here we go.
Here it comes. Oh my. And this look. So perfect. Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely.
Great way
perfect.
To end an episode. I wish they would have done little things like that more.
More teases like that.
Oh, what a tease indeed.
Yeah. Oh. Definitely.
All right. Well, that's it. So, Blood Woo! Fever's good episode, well plotted, well written. Rhythmically, I thought it was structured well, and great performances from Roxanne and Robbie.
Totally.
Great.
Pretty fun hour of TV.
It's hard to act that much in a cave repeatedly, but they made it work.
Act that much in a cave repeatedly.
Yeah, no kidding.
It's acting.
acting. Char, I believe that you have some shout-outs for us before we close.
I do, man. I don't even have just one. Not one, not two. I've got three shout-outs to give this week. We called, you answered, and I can't thank you enough. So I want to give thanks to, and I apologize if I slaughter your names, Shinerin and Jobel092 and CaptSFUFP. They gave us 5 stars on iTunes. They wrote us a review. And in turn, that helps us, or helps others, find us on iTunes. So that is awesome. And you are awesome for doing that for us. We appreciate it. And if anybody else wants to do that, we will acknowledge you on the show, just as I did for these three. Also, we have a sponsor that we need to acknowledge, and that is trekfan.org. Go to that website. There's a little puzzle for you to decode. And if you can do that, you will face more challenges, more fun, and even have a chance to win some prizes.
It is well worth the time that you'll spend on it, guys. And it's great for Star Trek fans, and it's a lot of fun. Now, before we go, next week, we're having another bad guy analysis episode. And last time we did this, we analyzed the Kazon. You know, some people doesn't really thrill them with a Kazon. But one race that I haven't heard one negative thing where people say, like, oh, I hate those guys. I can't stand those episodes. Where I feel like more and more people say, no, that was a great idea. Great episodes, great bad guys. Next week, we are analyzing the Vidians.
Yes.
The phage is coming through. So, everybody, thank you so much for listening. Thanks for coming along with our commentary, and please tune in next week. This has been To the Journey.
To the Journey.